Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
10 seconds says you, pal. 10 seconds says you.
If we feel like it. Nope, the music will start.
He went early because you baited him.
Did he really?
That's what I do. Not early.
I bait people.
On time. That's true. Can confirm, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Hey, I don't know about you guys. It's been kind of a long week on our end. Maybe nobody else has anything going on.
Just a little bit.
But we made it to Happy Hour Friday. We believe the end is in sight, although there is some stubbornness going on right now. Or as we like to call it, economics on tap.
That's right. That's right. We've got the live stream up and running. So for those of you watching on YouTube, thanks for coming on. Here's where things stand as of this taping. It is 3:30 on the West Coast of the United States. There are four or five states out. I mean, everybody knows the drill. The upshot is nothing's been called. Nobody has been designated elect anything. Vice President Biden's supposed to give a speech in a couple of hours. And that's where we are. That's where we are. And I won't even get into the President of the United States because we're going to get into that in a minute in my news item and then in my Make Me Smile, too. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking my penultimate Founders Porter, after which I'm either going to have to buy more or find a new beer. Because literally I have a beer once a week, apparently, just like Kai.
That's not the way it works. It's not
a big beer
more
drinker.
Or find new beer. You can just buy more.
Maybe I'll try another porter since this is my new thing, the porter. But it is delightful.
Oh, that can be tricky, though, because switching breweries can be tricky.
It got cold.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm nervous.
I know.
I mean, now that I've found a beer that I like, I'm like, do I have to stick? Yeah. Maybe we die together now. This is it.
Wow.
Put a ring on it.
So who's going to
porter?
Who's going to sit in for you?
Forever. We're together forever.
Yes, I got that.
Jeez.
I'm having a Founders All Day IPA, which I found in my fridge, which is excellent. So we're sharing breweries, which is cool. Yeah.
We're Founders Twinsies?
It's a session ale. We're Founders
and
Twinsies.
I have my IPA glass and everything.
Awesome. I do not have my IPA glass.
We're so bonded today. We probably picked the same stories.
No, but I did pick a story of a person who is a favorite of yours. So we will get there.
Really?
I suppose we'll get there now. Should we get there now?
I mean, now seems like the moment. Let's do the news.
Okay. So there is a piece in The Atlantic by Zeynep Tufekci, who, as we know, is a favorite of yours. She is a sober and somber voice on a lot of things. She is at the University of North Carolina. I forget what she does, like sociology and something else, right? What does she do? Anyway, she writes on topics
of
great
importance. She does, internet and the social and how the world works. She wrote that tear gas and Twitter. Yep.
Yeah. Hang on. I gotta let the dog in. Hang on.
Okay.
Wait, come here. sorry, I hadn't let the dog in. She's got a tennis ball, but I'm not going to play. Anyway, so there is a piece in The Atlantic, the headline of which is, and you're going to hear some dog breath here, and I apologize. Hear that?
Love this. Love everything
she
about this.
She really wants to play.
This
she
what
really
we
wants to play, but aww. I gotta work here. Zeynep's piece is called America's Next Authoritarian Will Be Much More Competent. And here's her thing. Trump is fundamentally inept. Right, as a politician.
Yeah.
He is unthinking and brash and all gut and, you know, the whole deal. And that is at least in part why he is losing this election. Her point is that the next strong man, of which there are many in this society, will be smarter, more adept, a better politician. And we should be on guard because it can happen again. And the reason this got me is because I put great faith at the beginning of the Trump administration in the institutions and the people of the institutions of this government. And that has proven to be misguided, right? Because one political party rolled and supported and enabled him in everything he wanted to do and is still doing it even as he lies about the results of this election. That party has manipulated the institutions of government so that it will be easier next time for a strong man or an authoritarian figure or a strong woman, frankly, because she names it one or two, to take over. And it's not a long piece by Tufekchian standards. It's quite digestible. Look, she writes long. But it's thought-provoking and really just a little bit terrifying, even in what should be a moment of appreciation that the democratic process is working. So I submit it for your approval in the Atlantic, Zeynep Tufekci.
Yeah. You should read it. It's a really good piece. And Zeynep, we should note, is Turkish and knows of whence she speaks, because a lot of her perspective comes from having seen, you know, the rise of Erdogan in Turkey. Turkey was a very becoming a very secular place. It was very democratic. Istanbul was, you know, this like the world's meeting ground. In fact, I really still need Turkey to get it together because I have this plan to have my 50th birthday party at the Basilica Cistern in Istanbul. Uh-huh. And so if they could, we got some years.
Istanbul is cool.
I don't need to say how many.
Istanbul is cool. Yeah.
But I went there and I was like, this is where I'm having my birthday. It's five. We have 5 years.
We're still in double digits.
They have 5 years to get it together.
Wow. Okay.
I know. So like, come on, Turkey. So she does know of when she speaks. I think it's really, I think that a lot is going to depend on what happens in the aftermath of this election. If we assume, which at this moment we believe that we can, that Biden is elected, what the question, because look, none of the divisions go away. And frankly, none of the disinformation goes away. An entire sort of like cult has been enabled of the QAnon variety. They're getting elected to Congress. And a lot about American politics could change. Or this could sincerely be a repudiation based on the fact that Biden is now on track to win the popular vote by more than 7 million. And one assumes the Electoral College, which is a pretty big statement by American political standards. And so I guess it's like now we're once more into the breach, friends.
Well, yeah, but so two things. And she points this out in the piece, right? Some of the institutions of this government are distinctly undemocratic, of which the Electoral College is one. The Senate of the United States is another. But here is how she finishes. The real message of this election, she writes, is not that Trump lost and Democrats triumphed. It's that a weak and untalented politician lost, while the rest of his party has completely entrenched its power over every other branch of government. The perfect setup for a talented right-wing populist to sweep into office in 2024.
I will also say I read some rebuttal. Yep.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the other kind of rebuttal tweet I read. I mean, that's totally my we'll see. Like, we used to call it the cop out of every reporter. Like when you get to the bottom of a story and you're just I'm not sure what to say. Here you go. Time will tell.
Right. Time will tell.
So part one was time will tell. Part two, though, I did see some tweets sort of rebutting this idea that, and this is really important, right? That it's less the politics that matter sometimes and more the person. I mean, there really is a cult of personality to presidential elections. And if you look at, you know, historically, the person who comes along and flips the whole shaboodle, it's usually based on some kind of like big personal connection. It's charisma. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who convinced everybody that he was like the world's most successful businessman via TV show. And so what she's arguing is that there will come along someone who has the personality, the sort of like personal appeal and street skills and the politics. And I would argue that although we are vulnerable to that, that the Venn diagram of those things occurring is not common.
No, but all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. And I think the sense of relief that a lot of people who've been distressed about what Donald Trump and Trumpism have done to some of the institutions of this democracy, the temptation now will be to go, oh, God, Biden won. He's a good guy. We're all set. No.
We should definitely not do that.
That's magical thinking. No. Right.
We need to have the next 4 years, we need to have a conversation about race in this country.
We
need to have a conversation about framing in this country. And like, who sets the nature of the conversations? Yeah, no, our troubles are far from over, friends. Our troubles are so far from over. On a more hopeful note, maybe, Jesus Alvarado on the tech team posted this just now in the Tech Ideas Slack and said, Q has not posted since Election Day. It's driving followers nuts. This is Ben Collins, who does the best work. He and Brandi Zadrozny over at NBC News. He says it's driving followers nuts. They were told to trust the plan for 3 years, and some are starting to realize there isn't one. They want guidance or an explanation, and it hasn't come yet. Others are embedding themselves further into the lie. On Election Day, seven hours after Q's last post, Ron Watkins resigned as admin from 8kun, which holds Q's posts, and so on and so forth. And this is like part of this question, right? What's going to happen now in the disinformation sphere? What's going to happen in this parallel universe where people truly believe that the media, celebrities, liberals are part of this deep state conspiracy to take down Donald Trump? Are they going to think that the deep state won? Or are they going to focus on the fact that this 3 years of promises seem to have not come to pass? And will it dissipate when there's not, you know, a figurehead in the White House who's stoking the flames of these beliefs directly from the podium?
Directly from the podium. Super quick.
Weird times.
A lot of love in the comments on the YouTube for the Founders Breakfast Stout for you. So I'm just saying.
Ooh, breakfast stout, really, people? Okay, fine. Beer for breakfast.
I don't think you have to drink it at breakfast. Probably has like.
I assume it has some oatmeal-y type situation happening.
Yeah, that would be my guess. All right. Well, let's call that a transition, shall we? To the later part of this podcast.
Let's smile it up.
All right, so look, I've done it again, and I apologize in advance, but my smile is not a thing that is inherently funny or lighthearted. So I'm going to get mine out of the way first, and then you can actually make a smile. Mine is more in the tradition of, oh, that's okay, fine, it's good, but it's not smile laughy. So in addition to the Zeynep Tufekci article in The Atlantic, I also commend to your attention, listeners and everybody within the sound of our voices, the clip that's circulating around about the opening monologue from Stephen Colbert last night about the lies that the President of the United States told from the podium last night about this election. Because if we are going to be vigilant about this democracy from henceforth, we need people to start saying stuff out loud. And I think actually what's interesting is you've seen the mainstream media say more of these things out loud the last number of weeks as it has come to a crescendo. But Colbert, as he often does, put a point on it. And I just, we'll have the link in the show page. I'm sure Tony will get it there and I'll tweet it out again. But it's really good. It's about 8 minutes, you know, whatever. Also, I can't quite get used to Colbert at home with long hair, but that's a whole different thing.
You sound so like, get a haircut and get a real job. When we first started this show and we did a segment called, this is like so meta, we did a segment called Normal, Not Normal. And we would just sort of try to keep track of things that were happening that were not normal. Remember that? Because we started show. The same age as the Trump administration. Yeah. Like we started it in January, right after or before, right around the time of the inauguration. And we started this Normal, Not Normal segment. And I got to say, I think that we were literally overwhelmed by the fire hose of not normal. And at some point, just had to sort of give up, right? Because the show's only so long. And I am curious to see. And again, we are having this conversation before this race has officially been called, although we're to the point now where like people like Nate Silver on Twitter are like,
let's be grownups, right? It's settled. We just, you know.
It's done. It's just that everyone is literally so afraid. Yeah. I mean, this is about not normal. Everyone is so afraid of what this president will do that they're afraid to call it not normal.
And I think the bind that Fox News finds itself in is just so delicious in so many ways. Having called Arizona so early, and let's say that their election analysis desk is really highly regarded in the profession of people who do that. But they have beer burp. They have put themselves in a really bad spot Look, at least I turned away from the microphone.
Hashtag Friday.
Because they called, that's right, they called Arizona so early, and now it's like, come on, just call something else. But of course, the challenge is as soon as they call something else, like, oh, Pennsylvania, boom. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the hell and fury of the Trump faction of the GOP rains down on Fox News.
I mean,
you know,
think about, well, and just think, just take a moment and step back and think about how much control the media had in electing, how much of a role, unquestionably, right? How much earned, unearned media was given to the Trump campaign, and how much now the media has a role in the misinformation that is spreading while we wait. The ability of a renewed sense from the Q people that maybe the reason it's taking so long is that there's a bunch of shenanigans and when in fact it's probably, like, realistically, it's fear. And that is a really scary situation.
Anyway, to say something smiley, because we're out of time and we can't go rambling.
You know what I'm loving right now? Philly.
What?
Because Philly is hilarious. Yeah. Philly is crazy. Philly is awesome. They basically had a day-long dance party in the streets, which is delightful because Philadelphia is, of course, you know, Allegheny County. Is that the one? It's like, Philly is like, we're going to deliver this race in terms of Pennsylvania. Yeah. And there's been this day-long party. And so there has been this sort of absolutely hilarious meme all day because some on the far right and just Republican Party have said, like, oh, you should go to Philadelphia and, like, mess with the county, you know, see what's happening there. And it's like I think Lou Dobbs said, it seems like a cesspool electorally. Why don't Republicans surround it and apply a little something, something? Philly has been like, try it. Just come on. And the tweets about it are hysterical. They're like, no. Like, I wouldn't pick a fight with, like, the sweetest little old librarian in Philly. They're like, gritty, we'll eat you alive. Like, it's just, I mean, it's amazing.
It's always sunny in Philadelphia, say the comments. The comments also say, by the way, that Pittsburgh is Allegheny County. Philadelphia is just Philadelphia.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, whatever. Philly.
I'm here for the Philly content, if nothing else.
Take us out on the Philly there, Charlton, would you? Man, oh, man. Or Drew. I don't even know who's driving today.
It's Charlton. We chatted earlier.
All right, we're done.
We hung out.
That's it. At the end of a very long week in this democracy. Let us just say that. We are back, of course, next week. In the meanwhile, send us your answers to the Make Me Smart question, would you? It is, what is something you thought you knew but later found out you were wrong about? Email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Voice memos are better because we get to hear you instead of me and Molly reading your stuff, which is always much better, much better.
We love it. Yep. All right. See you Monday, everybody. Good luck. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera.
There we go.
Tony Wagner is our digital producer. I'm doing it. Stop. Ben Hethcote produces video with the help of our video intern, Ethan Parrots, who I haven't heard from lately, and I hope he's okay. Hope Ben didn't kill him. Just kidding, Billy.
Right?
And Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device.
Charlton Thorpe is in charge in the studios down in L.A. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez did the theme music. Donna Tam produces. Sitar Nieves executive directs, whatever that means, and we are out of here.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.